everyone, and welcome back to the Towards Data Science podcast for a special and slightly offbeat episode. Now, as you might know, if you follow the podcast, we usually talk about the world of cutting-edge AI capabilities and some of the emerging safety and other challenges that the future of AI might bring. But I thought that for today, it'd be cool to talk about the applied side of data science a little bit more and the ways in which data science has changed in the last year or two. And I found the perfect guest to do that with. Her name is Sadie St. Lawrence, and among other things, she's the founder of Women in Data, which is a community that helps women enter the field of data and advance through their careers. And she's also the host of the Data Bytes podcast, a seasoned data scientist, and a community builder extraordinaire. Sadie joined me to talk about her founder's journey, what data science looks like today, and even the possibilities of blockchains introduced for data science on this episode of the Towards Data Science podcast. Sadie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really been looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. I've been really stoked for it ever since John Crone introduced us from the Super Data Science podcast. He's had you on like twice, and I can see why the minute we talked. You have so much to say about so many different topics. I mean, we're going to be having not a defocused conversation, but a very broad conversation across many different things, because that's the nature of your interests and expertise. So this is an especially exciting opportunity for me, and I'm really glad that you decided to join.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Okay, so let's start with the really big thing on your plate these days. You are, of course, the founder of Women in Data, which is a really interesting organization group with an interesting mission. I love founder stories just because of like my experience in life as a founder as well. I love hearing other people talk about what brought them to the game and how it worked out for them. So could you like share with us a little bit about like what your journey was like in founding Women in Data, what the mission was, how it came to be?
Yeah, so I actually say I have two founders' journeys. It's when I started the organization and then when I went full time, because there's a long time of span in between the two of them. So a lot of time when founders share their story, like their full time focus on it. So when I started Women in Data, I was not full time focused. I was working a full time job as a research analyst. I was getting my master's degree in data science at that time. And it was really through those experiences that I was like, I need a community. I need people and I need support. And through my master's program, I just saw a big lack of diversity in the field. And this was in 2014. So the industry of data science was fairly new. And I was like, if we're starting out this way with such few women represented in this field, like, I know a trend line, it's not going to go up very fast from here, right? So like,
and by the way, what was the distribution there, if you don't mind? Like, what did it look like in 2014?
In 2014, so in my cohort and class of 30 people, it was me and one other female in the cohort.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and just to give people some perspective, in 2014, when I went to look for a master's program, there were only 5 master's programs in the United States offering data science. I cannot even count how many universities offer these programs now, right? So yeah. This was, it was a different time, right? But I just saw that as a problem of like, hey, if this is how we're starting in the industry, like we need to address it and make some change now. And so it really just started with a way to connect with people. I was young, I was in school, I was working, I didn't have many resources. So I opened a meetup page and I said, hey, if anybody wants, come to this restaurant, we'll do some networking. And I sat at the restaurant by myself with a little sign that said Women in Data. And like most RSVPs, they started to drop before. And here we are at the time of the event and there was nobody to be seen. And like, how embarrassing is that, right? To like want to have this community, to start this community, to make a change. And you're sitting at a restaurant at a table by yourself with a sign and there's nobody else with you.
That's such a classic startup founder like situation to be in. Like you just come up with this harebrained idea and nobody likes it and you just have to eat it.
Right. You know, they say like build it and the people will come. And I was like, no one came, right? Yeah. Well, thankfully someone actually did come. They had ran into traffic and I told myself, because I was really embarrassed at the time that no one was there. And so I said, I'll wait 15 minutes. I was like, 15 minutes is like a reasonable amount of time. I felt like sit there and wait. So I did. And thankfully I did, because one person came and she ended up then bringing two other people with her in the car. And that was really the birth of the community of women in data. So I always tell people, you know, wait 15 more minutes. You never know what's going to happen when you wait 15 more minutes.
Yeah, that's so the story of so many startups, is that like tenacity, pushing a little bit further than other people would say, you know, would give up on. That's really interesting. So that first kind of nascent group of like three people, was that like the nucleation point? Like, did they each start to bring in more friends and more friends, or did you have to actively seek out those kind of next people? Like, I'm curious about that growth story.
Yeah, it's really, really amazing what happens when with just a small group of people, right? So they were like, hey, we came, we showed up, we love it, let's have another meeting, right? And really what it came down to was just the consistency. And I held monthly meetings, and we still do that today. All of our chapters, that's, you know, kind of our standard practice, is you hold a monthly meeting as a chapter lead. And it's that consistency that over time, you know, one person comes, they had a great session, enjoyed their time, and they started to bring more and more people. And now today, you know, we have a community of 30,000 people, which is incredible.
And what were those conversations like? Because I imagine, you know, when you're in that world, and, you know, there's like two women in a class of 30, let's say, there's some conversations that you'd be starved for that you wouldn't be able to have, let's say, in the regular context. What was some of the air that was being let out of the balloon, so to speak? What was the magic that made these meetings really valuable for the community there?
Yeah, I would say it was just a really exciting time in data science. You know, I mean, the term had just been coined a few years ago, right? So,
right.
And recently, like the big thing of the Harvard Business Review, the sexiest job of the 21st century, I mean, that had just dropped, you know, 2 years prior. So there was all this energy and excitement around it. And then when you brought women together, I think one of the things that changes about it is usually they may have been in meetups or conversations where they weren't fully represented. And so there's this feeling of being different, which then allows us to not show up as our true selves, right? So when we don't feel like we don't belong, what happens is then we hide who we really are, because we need belonging to be able to show up and be our true selves. So when they came into a group where it's like, hey, I'm excited about this subject, and there's other women that now I feel like I can relate to, I have a sense of belonging, we just talked about it, right? We were just talking about like the field and what we're excited to do, and, you know, all the things we wanted to learn. And, you know, that cool next session, can you teach me that? And who can we bring in to learn about this? And so really the conversations were just more around like the opportunity in the field and kind of where we thought it was going to go.
And so it was like not necessarily about breaking into data science at that point, or like the emphasis was it industry focused? Like, how am I going to get into industry? Or was it truly like that broad? Like, what are the tools? What, like, where is this whole space going?
Yeah. So, you know, being a data scientist myself, I always love to understand our members. And in the early days when I just led a chapter, like the audience was very broad. You would have entrepreneurs come in because they were like, what do I need to know about this new data science field to incorporate into my startup, right? You also had business leaders come in because they're like, is this something I need to start building a team for? Then you had people who are like, hey, I'm kind of interested in this as a subject. So in those early days, the group was very diverse. I think now, just because the industry has matured, right, we have very different personas within women in data for what we see people coming into. Mm. All are welcome, right? But now it's a little bit more standard focus in like, hey, I'm practicing in the industry, or I'm changing my career into it, or I'm a data citizen, right? So we've seen a little bit of a migration there. But in the early days, it was just so new that everybody was just excited and wanted to learn more, which was fun.
And what was community building like back in those days? Because obviously, like, there are a whole bunch of tools now for community builders that didn't exist when you were pioneering this stuff. So, like, what are some of the ways maybe in which you found it especially challenging to get this off the ground? And then, like, what are some of the ways that's maybe changed more recently as far as tooling?
Well, I would say one of the things is, at that time, we were all pretty used to meeting in person, right? And the, you know, getting the word out, there was social media, but to really understand it, you have to have an experience. And so, like, women in data expanded because we had a member who left she moved from the chapter I started, and she moved to San Francisco and was like, there's all these groups here, but nothing has the culture and community that Women in Data does. Can I take what you started and start it here? And so that was our first, you know, that was our second chapter. We called it our sister chapter, right? And just to test it out and see like, hey, can we grow this and build it? But that only happened because she experienced it, right? She experienced what our monthly meetings were like, what the community was like. And when she moved, she was like, hey, that isn't here. So it was a very organic, like very organic in the sense of like, hey, I attended this, I experienced it. Now I want to take it to my community.
I think that's No, I was just going to say, I feel like that's such, it's such a good answer because it's the hard thing. It's like the secret sauce that everybody wants to skip. They want a big community that where people invite other people and a sort of superficial thing. But this idea of experiences does seem really important. Could you dive deeper into like, what was it about the culture that was so magical that, that made this this woman who moved to San Francisco go, hey, you know, none of these other organizations really had that vibe. Like, can you put your finger on what that vibe was that was missing?
Yeah, so we would get a lot of reviews like after our meetings. And I think one of the main thing was just that like everyone was welcome. And, you know, even at the chapters, so I live in Sacramento and that's where I started the first chapter. We had a lot of men then start to attend the meetings because they were just like, this is just such an awesome group. And you guys talk about all of these awesome things and like, we want to be a part of this too. We want to support this. And I think it really came from my personal experience. When I first entered data science, I felt there were a lot of people in the field who were on what I call like the high priestess of data science, right? The holier than thou, right? And then once I learned more about it, I was kind of like, I'm calling BS to this, right? Because like, yeah, it does take knowledge. It does take work, but like you are better than anyone else. And like my philosophy is like, I'm not greater than, but I'm not less than anyone else, right? And so when you have this new technology, it can be scary and frightening to people, but like the power of it is really making sure that everybody feels welcome and it's accessible and it's approachable and that we're just here to have a conversation and we're all here to learn. And I think, you know, my experience of the negative experience of meeting some high priestess data scientist, I was like, I never want to be that, right? Like I want to be the person who's like, hey, you can learn this. Join the conversation, try it out. Like we're all in this together. And I think that really is what like laid the foundation to it being this culture that people wanted to take to other cities.
Yeah, that's so interesting because it's something you see with companies as well. Just like the culture of the founders, the personalities of the founders end up shaping the culture of the entire organization. And it happens over and over again. good and bad. Absolutely. Right. Like, and this is kind of how young upstart people like who don't have any experience end up taking over the world in some cases or industries because they just have a better culture and it ends up kind of propagating, getting amplified. And anyway, it's just fascinating to see such a great clear example where you have individuals who get steeped in the culture of like one chapter and then they move to a different city and they end up nucleating the same culture and kind of propagating. It's such a special thing to see.
Yeah, it's really cool. And, you know, now it's changed a lot, right? You were asking about community building tools. I mean, now we saw a big uptick during the pandemic and now we can connect from a global level, right? So
right.
I think there's new opportunity and new challenges, right? So now we have the opportunity to scale and grow really rapidly, but the challenge is like, how do you keep that culture, right? Like how do you keep that experience and how do you disseminate a culture in a virtual world? I think a lot of companies are trying to figure this out today, right? That's why we see all these companies. No, we will return to the office because the office, being in the office is our culture, right? It's like, well, that isn't, but I understand why you feel that way, right?
Yeah. And would you have any advice to people who are thinking about building a community from scratch, like now today? Would it be different? Would it look different from the way it was when you did it? Or would it be roughly the same?
Yeah, I think we're in an interesting time, right? Because I'm seeing things pop up of back in person here and there, right? But I think still there's a lot of hesitancy to being fully like in person to things. So I think it would be very different. I would take a hybrid approach, right? I would make sure you're very strong online and have a great online presence and you attach to larger platforms so that you can do traffic funneling from larger platforms to your movement of what you're doing. But then I do think that there still needs to be an element of in-person. So we work as one network, one global network within Women in Data, but we still have kept our chapters in the hopes that when we return to in-person, they can still gather on a monthly basis in person. And I think you can function as a global community and an online platform, but then use what in-person is best for. In-person is best for conversations. It's best for connecting. It's best for gathering, right? And I think having a model where you have both is really how I would approach it today. And that's mainly because that's how I run Women in Data today. But so far, it seems to be working.
No, that makes total sense. And it reflects as well, like a trend that you see a lot in startups yet again. I mean, this idea that people will rush to like fully automate something that starts off all visceral and human and manual, and they'll just try to scale it by turning it into like an app or a product. And it does not work. Or at least if it's going to work, you have to approach it so carefully. You have to do incremental stuff, make sure you don't lose the magical on the way, because tweaks throw your product off so easily, especially when it works, like Women in Data does. Now, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, this is gonna be a bit of a hard pivot, but when we spoke before, we had a really interesting conversation about blockchain tech. And you were really interested in how the blockchain was basically creating a new kind of data, which lends itself to new applications in particular of data science. And I just love to like maybe prompt you with that, get your high level thoughts on like this blockchain thing, because it seems like buzzword soup sometimes. People go like blockchain and data science, and then somehow you merge them together and it's like this super buzzword soup. So I'd love to like maybe get a little bit of a sense from you of like what are the real opportunities you see here that aren't sort of this buzzword noise that we hear so much about.
Because when you merge them together, then you just become a consultant, right?
That's right. Yeah. a very well paid consultant, but a consultant.
Exactly. But yes, I'm a big fan of application. So I'll be honest with you, back in 2016, I remember this moment very well. I gave a talk and it was about AI, nothing to do with blockchain, right? And someone was like, do you think blockchain will be a thing? And I don't know why they felt like I was the appropriate person to ask that question too, maybe because I worked in tech, right? But they asked me and I remember I was like, no, I just don't see a lot of use for it, right? So I tell that to people because I was like, not a believer. I'm like, yeah, it's a cool concept, but there's so much we have to change in our systems of how we operate. I don't see this coming in to be useful. Well, my mind has changed, right? As I hope all of us grow and change our minds over time. And really the pivot point for me was when NFTs came out, so non-fungible tokens. So essentially for people who may not know, it's just a way to show ownership that then gets recorded on the blockchain. And I like to refer to them as just tokens, because you can have fungible ones, you can have non-fungible ones. So when you have tokens, I was in this research of what they are. And at that time, I started to really experience a lot of hacking attempts. So my social media got hacked, people stole my photos, my account went down. I also had hacking on my email. I was just like, a lot of hacking was going on, right?
Do you know what caused this? Like,
yeah, I haven't found the person particularly. I do know it started from an old school account that got hacked, that my bachelor's degree from where I went to get my bachelor's, that got hacked. I didn't even know I still had an email account with them, right? That happened to be tied to my Facebook. Again, don't use Facebook very much, right? But we could go into a whole nother conversation about like all of our digital footprint that we've forgotten about, right? Yeah. From old accounts, and that how it leaves us vulnerable. Anyways, so my experience of being vulnerable in this instance of like, hey, there's these people are taking my photos, right? Or they're taking my account and my stuff, really started getting me to think about ownership. And then, so I'm kind of two parallel worlds. One, I'm getting hacked and thinking about what do I really own, right? And is Facebook really protecting me? Is Instagram protecting me? No, they didn't really care. At the same time, I'm researching NFTs, and all of a sudden I'm like, click link, right? There's a merge here, right? What is the merge? Well, the tokens are all about ownership, right? They're to verify that you have ownership of essentially anything. It can be a digital asset. It can be a non-digital asset, right? And so going down that journey of like, I think there's a lot of potential here actually, because I'm experiencing this problem and I'm starting to see this as a solution. And so if you're interested in the hacking and the tokenization, there's a whole bunch of research being done on digital identity within blockchain. You can research that. But then that started me to like really dive more into, okay, well, what are tokens? What are tokens built on? What is blockchain? Well, blockchain's actually just one version of a distributed ledger. What is a distributed ledger? A distributed ledger is just a database, right? And so then when someone says database, my like alarm bells go off because I'm like, hello, this is my world. I know databases, right? Like, what does this mean? And so when I finally boil it all down, like get rid of the hype, right? Get rid of the, this NFT sold for 69 million and this cryptocurrency is doing this. The fundamental underlying technology is a distributed ledger, which is just a database, right? So this is exciting to me because this is what we work with as data scientists or what we work with in AI. And so I started to go, if this is all a database, then, and people are starting to use it and create it, right? You can see how many cryptocurrencies are out there. I'm like, there's all these new databases that are being created, right? And then you start to see what's happening with tokens. And I'm like, there's all these NFT and tokens that are being created. And what's the underlying part? It's database. So I'm like, what am I going to do with this? There is so much opportunity now as a data scientist.
And so do you mind explaining too, because I think for some people listening, especially if they're more, you know, we do mostly AI capabilities type stuff. And so this is a bit of a departure, especially the crypto stuff for sure. Would you mind explaining, like, so when you say database, I think most people have some sense of like maybe what the blockchain is, but it might be helpful to go back over that again and just be like, okay, you know, this is what that database actually looks like. This is where different parts of it live and how they're connected, so that we can kind of activate data science brain a little bit and go like, okay, what, like, how can we imagine connecting the dots here? Would you mind diving into that kind of description?
Yeah, so essentially blockchain, right, which is probably the most well-known type of distributed ledger, is essentially little blocks, right? Or little pieces of code that are strung together, right? And why is it important for these little pieces of code to be strung together? Is because when all of the pieces of code are strung together and line up, we have what we call is we reach consensus. So it's a way to verify something. So essentially, this is these little bits of code, the blocks, right? That is the database that I'm talking about. But why it's so powerful is because having them connected together reaches that consensus and verification. So that goes back to essentially the added security layer, the added ownership layer that now can be reached, right? So there's a lot of potential for this in the term, mainly from a security standpoint, right? But then just in terms of where we're progressing in a web, in the growth of the web from web 1, 2, and 3 to an ownership standpoint, right? So that I could actually own the photos that they are already mine, that I post to Instagram or wherever I leave my digital trail throughout the day, right?
So we've got this notion then of there's a database, it lives in the ether. Everyone can have, like, owns different copies of it, chunks of it, maybe on their local machines. So everybody kind of can put it together as a collection of people. It's decentralized in that sense. And yeah, so like transactions are stored on this ledger. There's like a thing that says Jeremy sends 5 Bitcoin to Sati or something. I wish I could send 5 Bitcoin to Sati. Anyway, Jeremy sends 5 Bitcoins to Sati. Sati sends 3 Bitcoins to whoever else. And like this forms like a history of all the transactions and activity. And that's also like this ledger, there are copies of it on all of our computers, or bits and pieces of copies of them on all of our computers. And so now, like, how can you do data science with that? Like what interesting stuff can I do then with this sort of data structure?
Yeah, well, I think one is just what's now being created, right? So just think of how things work today. I'm going to compare kind of how things work today to then what you can do with blockchain. So today, let's say you work for an e-commerce company, right? You have a platform that does the transactions of what your business is selling, right? That the actual payment transaction, maybe that's done through Stripe or PayPal, so you get financial data. Then you have the website transactions, right? Or the website views, et cetera. So all of those kind of underlying business systems, then you pull out the data from that. Maybe you put it into, you know, S3 bucket or into Redshift, and you take that information and you start to analyze it, right? So today we are doing the exact same thing, but with blockchain. So today, instead of your financial system, maybe it's a cryptocurrency, right? And so just as you send transactions through PayPal and Stripe, you're now sending transactions through ETH or through any altcoin, right? Through HBAR coin, et cetera. So now essentially that's just a one for one, just as you have your Stripe transactions, you also have like your cryptocurrency transaction. So essentially as more businesses start to adopt that, this is now a new kind of, again, database of information that you want to be pulling into your models. So it really comes into how I see we're just about on the precipice of enterprises really starting to adopt this for ownership and verification purposes. As they start to adopt it, you as a data science team just now have a new source of data that you're being able to pull in and being able to analyze. What are some of the amazing things that you can do with this? Probably the thing that excites me the most is the data is immutable. Everything is timestamp and it's verified. So what do data science spend so much of their time doing? Cleaning data, right? Because it's a mess. But if your main source system of data for your business transaction is a blockchain or distributed ledger technology, all that's clean, right? And right. You have a record of everything. Like, how exciting is that as a data science? Like, to think that like we could get standardized data that's all timestamped and verified and immutable, that nobody can go in there and fat finger up. That is really exciting to me. So I think there's two things. One is more businesses are going to start to adopt it. So that's a new system of record that you want to bring into your models. And then secondly, it's cleaner data. So like right. I, as a data scientist, would be pushing my organization to say, hey, why are we not using this as kind of the golden record, right? And using this now is going to make it easier for me to create models because I'm spending less time cleaning it because it's all time stamped and verified.
Interesting. And it is so connected to ground truth as well. Like there's no delay between like a transaction happening and it getting logged. Like the logging of the transaction is the transaction and everything is like complete ground truth. So it's such an interesting, reliable kind of tool in that sense.
Because we spend so much time and money on MDM, master data management, right? So like this totally changes the game for like data governance, right? Why? Because that is your record of truth. If it's right. not your record of truth, you're going to have some main business problems in your business architecture. But like, I mean, this could essentially wipe out all of those tools of MDM and master data management. Like there's so much opportunity with this space.
Okay. Really fascinating. I love that perspective. And actually connected to that too, I used to be I was the founder of a data science mentorship startup called Sharpest Minds. And I was really focused on data science for a really long time. And then I moved on into AI safety type stuff. And the podcast has moved in that direction too. And one consequence of that is that I am less in touch today with like the bread and butter, like application level data science world, which I'm sure has evolved in some fascinating ways in the last year and a half to 2 years. I'd love to get from you like the update. Like what have I probably missed here? Like what are some ways in which data science has shifted in the last year, year and a half or so that you think are most important?
Yeah, well, I think the first one is just that it's become a lot more standardized. Just this year, the federal government, so if you live in the US, the US federal government has now released official job descriptions for data science. So why is this a big deal? Like, why do we care about the government and what they're doing in data science? Well, to me, if you look at like hype curves and a maturity of an industry, once government adopts it, we're there, right? Like that's kind of the end of it. So it's an exciting thing though, because it means that everyone has recognized the value and there's a lot of opportunity in the space. The biggest change I've seen is just how much the spectrum of data science has expanded. So back in the day, it was like, you need to have a PhD, like you need to be a full stack developer, like build everything from beginning to end. We've parsed that out into little bits now, right? Like the rise of data engineering is huge. I think that's probably even more important than data science today. We're starting to realize like, if you can't build your data flows pipelines, like you're not going to be able to do much, right? Yeah. And so that's portioned off. There's now the rise of the product data scientist. So having somebody who looks at the value from data and manages the data as an actual product of like, how do we make money from what we're doing with this data, et cetera. There's obviously been the data visualization specialist, et cetera. But more importantly, now we're reaching a maturity where people have experience in this industry. And so people are wanting not just a data scientist, but an industry specific or product specific data scientist, right? So if you are looking for a job in the financial services industry, they want to see that you have that past experience working with financial data. So people are getting, employers are also getting a lot more choosy in this space. Additionally, now that we have time for people to have experience, experience is gold, right? So everybody talks, oh, there's all these job openings and all these things. And it's like, yes, there are, but it's now, unfortunately, it takes more than just having an education. In the early days, you could get by. Everyone's like, I don't know what this is. I just need some people, yeah. Right? But now I'd say you have to be much more specialized. You have to have a really clear brand story. And you need to know where in the spectrum of data science you fit, right? Do you want to be more on the data engineering side? Do you want to be more on the product development side? Do you want to be more on the visualization side? And then with that, what industry do you want to be in as well?
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Definitely consistent with a lot of the trends that I was seeing back in the day. You know, I remember being, I think I was in grad school in like 2014. Now, I was doing physics. And I saw all my friends go off into data science. And the way they would do it was they'd have a couple of like Jupyter notebooks with a bunch of import statements. And that was it. They would go to employers and the employers would be like, wait, you know Python and you're a physicist? Okay, good. We're in business here. And that very quickly changed. It seems like nowadays, as you're saying, like getting more and more specific about the application domain, the data engineering, that sort of thing. Does this mean that like one size fits all, like data science master's programs are maybe becoming less relevant? Or I don't know, how does this change the way you think about the early education stage and the kinds of programs people should be doing?
Yeah, so I get asked a lot, like, should I get a master's and where should I go, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's a tricky question. I break it down into three categories, which is, the question that I usually ask myself is, when do you want a master's? Like some people, that's just like a personal goal to have a master's. Yeah. And that's to run an ROI on it. Like how much are you paying for this? And then what's your projected like income once you're done? And like actually look at it like a financial investment. So do an ROI analysis on like, and projections over time, et cetera, right? Plus that's a good data science, a little practice, little analysis, you know, before you get into your master's. And then the third thing is, do you need like a social learning aspect and do you need your education curated for you, right? You can go and you can actually take Harvard's computer science, all the curriculum in their bachelor's program for free online. But a lot of people don't, right? Why? Yeah. Because they still need that community learning aspect. So you need to do a self-analysis to just see like, is that something that's really helpful for me? Because if so, that may be a good place to start. I think regardless, if all the answers are yes to that, I would say just know that a master's alone is not enough to get a job.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about showing your work and knowing your brand story and networking and making connections.
This is something that I think people, I found historically at least, people struggled with at Sharpest Minds when they would start to go down the path towards getting a data science job. And they would often think that the Masters was like this key that would unlock the door. And what often, like disturbingly often, I'd find is like people with a master's degree struggled about as much as people with like a boot camp background at breaking into the space. It's like you said, you have all your work still ahead of you. You still have to do the brand stuff. You still have to do the specialization stuff. You still have to build projects and talk to people and do community stuff. So it, I don't know, it's sort of this like, I started to think of master's as like 2-year boot camps. And through that lens, it became harder and harder to justify that time investment as time went on. I imagine I could be wrong. There are surely master's programs that are exceptional. I'm sure that's the case. But yeah, I mean, the landscape does seem to shift so much, even over the course of 2 years. Like, if you started a master's 2 years ago, some of the things you might have missed are like GPT-3, the entire generative like image revolution, all kinds of new models coming out too, which also makes me wonder, like, has that been a change in data science that you've observed? Are these like big breakthroughs like GPT-3, where we're seeing, you know, generative language modeling, for example, come out and into its own? Like, are those being reflected in certain data science workflows? Like, are we seeing them being used by data scientists to analyze their data? Or are they still, let's say, being used just at the object level to generate text for chatbots or things like that?
Yeah, so I would say it comes down into like breaking it into categories of where you're working at, right? If you're at like a FANG company, yes, right? If you're at just a private industry company, maybe if you have a really strong like CDO and data science director, right? It all like there's still a lot of variety in the industry space. Like, you know, again, this goes into like looking for a job too, like really do your research just because it's like a data science job, like do your research on the actual team and like what you're doing. When you come down to the private and public sector, definitely not, right? Yeah. So I think that it's dragging based on industry of like where you're at and who's using it or not.
Okay, so I guess because one of the things I'm curious about is, you know, in those places where we do see a little bit more sophistication. Have you heard of people using like, I don't know, GPT-3 to get more value out of unstructured data, for example? Like, are there ways in which this has changed the day-to-day workflow of like a typical data scientist rather than like an AI researcher, which seems to be, you know, the early adopters in this space are always like the people closest to the research. But is that starting to happen? Are we seeing that diffusion, or is it still kind of too early for that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say I probably don't see it. And I think this again comes to just like a broader problem and why I was on a track to go and get my PhD in neuroscience and left because it was like, there was a disconnect between research that happens and then people using it. And I'm like, I want to use these things and make a change that way. And I think even within like AI research, as now there's more and more research, like unless a company has a really good connection with that university, right, and uses them as like a sounding board and an advisor, most companies just don't have, and individuals at the company I see don't have the time to read a research paper and look to see, hey, how can I test this out in my business? It's so run of the mill every day. Got to get this model out, update this in production, right? That time, there's not enough time to try new things, right? And
right.
So I think it's two problems, right? It's like, how do we disseminate the information from a research area into actual industry and practice? And then secondly, as if you're in industry and practice, how do you carve out enough time to learn and try new things? And I think if we can solve those things, you know, we'll see the application take off a lot faster.
Yeah, no, that makes, and knowledge diffusion is always such a big challenge for humanity writ large. I mean, like we had like people landing on the moon and there were still uncontacted tribes in the Amazon. Like there's always a significant gradient in certain terms of like technological availability. And actually like, so this, all this stuff makes me wonder, and I suspect the answer is probably yes, or probably the answer is, that's a stupid question, but here's the question. Given what you know now, given how you've seen data science evolve over the last couple of years, you know, we've talked about how it's changed so much. would you still recommend data science as a career path today for somebody who's trying to break in? Or do you have additional questions that you recommend people ask themselves beyond just like, I want to get into data science? Like, what would you have them think about to kind of, you know, second guess that thinking or figure out if it's really for them?
Yeah, so I think it's still a really good starting point. What I would say I see happen though now, oh, and I think it's fantastic, is we have a lot of people come into Women in Data who say, I want to be a data scientist. And then they get more exposure in the community and start learning new things. And they start to then see the spectrum of data science, right? It's like,
right.
I look at it as like a rainbow of different things. And I don't know if you probably know this better than I do, being your physics background, of like diffusion of light, right? It's like, in a white light, all those colors are there. And so right now, like coming into data science, you may just see like a white light, but like if you shine it just right, it opens it up and you see all the rainbow of colors that are actually in that white light, right? So I think it's still a good starting point. Start with data science and come in, but then on your learning journey, take time to reflect along the way to like, what did you like and what did you not like? And it's okay to say, hey, I actually like the strategy side of data science and analytics better. I actually like the engineering side of it, and dive into that. Like, I think it's important to not, I like to say, like, no, pick your wave, but know your ocean, right? Like, there's a lot you can do in this space. There's a big ocean of it in data science, but pick your wave. And so when you come in, you're not going to know, I want to be a data engineer in the healthcare industry and know, all these details. You have to get that experience to know it. So start with data science. As you're on your learning journey, take some time to reflect, oh, I like this class, didn't like this class, and use that to navigate and narrow in on your focus.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's also, there are so many stories that I've heard of data scientists who break in and they kind of go, oh, I want to be a data analyst. Or, you know, it's like, once you get in there, you kind of look around and you're like, oh, the day-to-day job that person is doing looks really interesting. And I don't know, I just feel like people underestimate the amount of horizontal mobility there is in the space. Like, you can kind of define your job sometimes if you have initiative and you're like, I think that's a cool project, I'll work on it on the weekends. And if it works out, that can become your new job in some cases.
And it's also such a better experience. I mean, I just recently interviewed someone, he started in data science, and then he went to data engineering, and now he's in data governance. And one, you're just like such a more well-rounded individual too. And then it helps you so that like your learning never stops. So like, feel free to pivot, right? Like, feel free to be like, hey, this was cool, but I'm okay with changing directions and now going a little bit different route. And, you know, who's to say, I think we're kind of over the age where like data science, I hope so, is the end all be all. Like, yeah, data governance people are important too. And data engineers are important. And no one, again, back to the high priestess of data science, no one is holier than thou. So it takes a team.
That seems like a really good note to wrap things up on. A good solid truism that I think we could all internalize a little bit better. So thanks so much, Sadie. I really appreciate it. This was a ton of fun.
Thanks. My pleasure.